This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're going to speak with Kate Murphy, who joins us from Houston, Texas. Welcome to the show, Kate, and how are you doing?
I'm fine, Meghna. How are you?
Would you really like me to answer that question?
I really would like for you to answer that question. How are you?
Well, there are two possible answers I can give you. There is the answer I would give you sitting here in the radio journalist's chair. And then there's the answer I would give you outside the studio. So which one do you
want? I'd like outside the studio, please.
Oh.
How are you? Truly, how are you?
I was hoping you'd actually pick the radio journalist's chair.
That's often the case with interviewers, isn't it?
Because that one would be...
That's why you have the job you have.
Because I would have picked, I'm fine, let's talk about your book, which we will. Okay, so since you asked, it's going to take a second, but I, quite honestly, how am I? To answer that question, it's kind of, I'm living a dual track experience. And on the one track, I walk through this world feeling profoundly fortunate, right? I have a job that I adore, that I feel like, at least in our little corner of the world, we're trying to do some good. Everyone in my family and people I care about are safe and secure. And healthy, and I feel like I have an opportunity to strive to be my best self every day. So what more could I ask for? And then there's this parallel track, which is very tired. Pretty depressed sometimes. I feel a lot of pressure to do my best for a lot of folks. And I feel like for very specific people, I am letting them down and not being the person I need to be for them. So those things are happening at the same time. That's how I am. So you earlier said, how are you? When I asked you how you are, you just said, fine. So do you want to tell me how you're actually doing?
Well, I agree with you. The work-life balance is a difficult thing. I think also because of COVID, we have this extra layer of stress. We have the normal stress that we have of our everyday lives that we deal with. But then there's this added burden of this uncertainty, this just low-level fear. You know, am I going to get sick? Is my family going to get sick? Is this safe? Can I do this? What? Everything's a risk-benefit analysis. Should I travel? Is it all right? Do you do boosters? So that's all in this, in your head as well. And it's just, like I said, it's an additional burden. And you may think you're getting used to it by now, but it's still a weight. And I think that on top of everything else, the work-life balance, the family obligations, plus wanting to do your best, because I can tell in your voice that you really earnestly want to contribute. You want to be helpful. You want to make society better, which I see definitely through the work that you do on this radio show. So I'm like you. I'm carrying that extra burden of wanting to be helpful and want to contribute. But there's that extra thing that you're worrying about, and it wears you down.
It does. And I'm pausing here because it was quite a remarkable feeling hearing you infer all of that just from the way that I talked to you or the way that I answered that. I'm not sure if I've experienced that a lot, to be perfectly honest, Kate.
Well, you have a very earnest voice, and you can tell in listening to your voice that you're somebody who really wants to contribute, who wants to do well, and you want this show to be the best it can be. And that's a lot of pressure you're putting on yourself. And I don't know what your family situation is, but trying to balance, you know, that's a burden in itself. And then you add on top of those two things, COVID. I mean, no wonder we're all, I mean, and particularly someone like you that is so driven, it makes it difficult, to say the least.
Oh my gosh, I'm actually doing the nervous laughter thing, which I wouldn't like to not do on the radio. But wow, you can really hear a lot. You hear a lot, Kate. How do you do that? How did you just do that?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really a lifetime, but also my job, like yours, is to listen to people for a living. I'm a journalist. And you're only as good as your sources, but you're only as good as you listen to your sources. And a lot of times you have to infer things and ask follow-up questions. And so there are a million questions I want to ask you, and I know you want to get to other things to do your show that would clarify what I heard in your voice, because I'm not going to get everything right. So I'm going to need to check in and say, this is what I'm getting. So when you got back to me and you said, oh, man, that's what I'm feeling, then I feel like, okay, I'm on the right track, but I don't know you. There's so much more to ask you to get into specifics. So it's really just hearing it, asking another question, and then checking in. Reflect, well, this is what I heard. Is this right? And then you confirming or saying, no, you know, it's more like this.
There's always been this art to listening that I'm not going to claim that I have mastered at all. But what I heard you just do is it. What you weren't just listening for the what, you were also listening or somehow hearing the how that I was saying what I was saying. And I'll fully admit it was sort of a 60% reveal about how I actually feel, and not a 100%, but still you heard a
all
lot.
All right, there's tons. There's tons. I know there's tons. I won't say I've gotten it all.
We are all
and
multitudes.
And I never will. And we never will. That's the thing, is that, you know, you have to realize that you will never know another person. And so it's always an adventure. And particularly with people, your loved ones, you're never going to know them all the way. So you can't ever make the assumptions of, oh, you know, I know you like the back of my hand, or we've been married so long, I know you. We never know another person. And besides, we're changing every day. You and I will be a little bit different after this conversation. And we'll go back to the people we love a little bit different after our day, after our experiences and our conversations. So if you stop listening to the people that you're really close to in your life and make those assumptions, oh, I know you, whether it's your kids or your spouse or even your best friend, I've known you so long, you know, I know what you're going to say, that you really lose touch with the other person. It's that continual exploration, asking questions. And so it really is this wonderful journey when you're on a relationship. It's a listening relationship where you are in this great conversation that never ends.
Yeah. So, but it's those exact same people that we often don't listen to the most, right? And I'm going to actually slide back into the radio journalist chair for a second, because I do want to tell people that you're the author of this terrific book called You're Not Listening: What You're Missing and Why It Matters. And the reason why we wanted to have you on today, and probably we should have you on every week, is that, you know, from sort of the it feels like there's the fraught state of the nation, there's the fragile state of the world, there's the fact that with COVID, we've all been, in a sense, thrown together more closely than ever in terms of like our family units and our little pods and friend units. And yet at the same time, when we had this ironic, unanticipated opportunity for a new kind of closeness, you know, because of that same thing, because of COVID and politics and the pressures on our lives, it feels like we as Americans are not listening to each other more than ever before. So let me just fact check myself here. I mean, are we actually listening less, Kate?
I think we are. And that's why I wrote the book, which came out right as COVID started. So I was working on it, doing all the research pre-COVID, but have been coping very much with the aftermath in my own personal life, but also all of the mail that I get from readers about how they're trying to listen or how they're listening differently as a result of COVID. And there are two, I think there are really two ways to look at this, is that this is making it more difficult to listen. Of course, we are we are withdrawing from one another because of fear of infection. And so we are in these closer pods where you have an opportunity. A lot of people have found that they have been able to listen to people because they didn't have the distraction. They didn't have to go to a million different engagements. They didn't feel like they needed to network. They didn't have this FOMO, fear of missing out, and always trying to be at the next event. And so they were at home, and they were probably not working in the home as well. So they were available and available to talk to people in their closest pod or within their families. And they found that they really had richer relationships and conversations. And it's why a lot of people are a little bit reluctant to go back to the always busy going and meeting a whole bunch of people and always going to the next thing, and really just having smaller circles where you can really listen and establish and deepen those relationships. But at the same time, when we were talking about that extra burden, when we're fearful, we don't listen. Fear makes people get into that fight or flight mode. And that is a more primitive part of the brain takes over. It's called the amygdala. And listening is higher order thinking. And you need to engage different parts of the brain. But the amygdala is kind of like the louder person in the room, and it drowns out everything else in your brain. And so I think you're seeing in a lot of even political discourse and within society now, because people are fearful, you see all this yelling and people really being entrenched. And that is fear. Mm. It looks like anger, but it's fear.
Well, today we are listening to Kate Murphy. She's author of You're Not Listening: What You're Missing and Why It Matters. And we're going to talk a lot more about why it matters when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everyone. It's On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are with Kate Murphy. She's with us from Houston, Texas, and she's author of You're Not Listening: What You're Missing and Why It Matters. And we really want to understand what we're missing and why it matters, especially in this day and age, in this country, in this life that we're living. And Kate, so you found out a lot about what the science says about what makes it hard for people to listen. And one of the most intriguing things in your book is that the people we're closest to, family members, immediate loved ones with whom we share, you know, homes, are often the ones that we listen to the least. There's a bias. Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's called the closeness communication bias. It actually has a name in the scientific literature. And it's that you would think, as you said, that you would listen to the most to the people that you love the most. But actually, the opposite's true. And we touched on this a little bit earlier. It's when you're so close to someone, you feel like, well, I already know what you're going to say. People lose their curiosity for one another. They feel like your brain does this thing where it feels like, okay, I've figured that out. Let me move on to something else. And as a result, people stop listening. They They tune it out because they figure out, I've got you figured out. I know, check that box. I know what you're going to say. And as we touched on earlier, people are changing every day. And so that's when people stop listening. That's where you get, whether in relationships or friendship, close relationships, romantic relationships or friendships, you get that, I don't know you anymore, or you don't know me at all. And it's probably true because that person has stopped listening as the pages turn in their lives. And the book has gone on. They're a different chapter, but you're still back in chapter two. And you haven't kept up. It's kind of like, you know, would you want to keep going out with somebody if they treated you as the same person you were on your first date? You know, like you ordered spaghetti on your first date, so you always want spaghetti. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a crude analogy, but it's the same thing where you stop listening, where, you know, I know that's your point of view.
Yeah.
Or I know that's what you're going to say. When we evolve and we change and we're different people every day, how we're feeling and how we're changing our opinions every single day.
You know, our brains are pattern seeking entities, right? So when it decides on like a piece of information, it wants to set that pattern forever. I completely understand that. But you, in the book, you write about how this has actually been kind of replicated in experiments, that scientists and researchers have done experiments where they have measured and found that people understand their loved ones no better than strangers.
Oh, right. They're the greatest studies. There are actually several of them. I touch on a couple of them in the book. But one was where they put a whole bunch of married couples in a circle, kind of like a parlor game, and they were all facing out. So they weren't looking at one another. And they had the spouses repeat phrases that could be taken two ways. Things like, something looks different today about you. You know, you look different. And that could be taken several ways. Like, you look horrible, or, hey, you look great, or something's different and I can't quite put my finger on it. And there were lots of phrases like that. And the spouses expected their significant other to understand what they meant more than the strangers. But in fact, the other members of the other couples were more accurate, either as accurate or even more accurate than the spouse. And in these various rounds going around. So, I mean, there were lots of studies like that where people assumed that the person that they were closest to would have the closest interpretation. Mm. And most of the time, they were like totally off. Mm.
You know, you said also beforehand, you said also that listening is a higher order function in the brain. So what is the brain doing here internally that makes it hard to achieve that higher order function?
Well, you touched on it. There are a couple of things going on. There are actually quite a few things, as the brain's a complicated place. But I loved what you were said about the brain being pattern seeking. And the brain is actually, we try and conserve energy in the brain. That's why we do that pattern seeking thing. It's actually a survival tactic. It is evolutionary. That's what we do, because our brain is 2% of our weight, but yet it uses up 20% of the energy. Mm-hmm. Our brains are just little combustion engines. And so if we think we figured out, we don't want to use any more energy on that. So that's why we create patterns and figure, okay, I don't need to do any more work. And so that's the first thing that's happening. But also the thing that I thought was so really interesting and so telling about communication and about listening and why it's so important is what happens in the brain between the speaker and the listener, the brain activity, the neural patterns of the speaker and the listener. The more those patterns mimic or mirror one another, the better the communication. So you've probably been at a party, or maybe when you first met your spouse, where it was that moment where you just clicked. You were talking and you were just so into what each other were saying. And we've all had that feeling like, oh, I get you, or this person gets me. And that feeling is that syncing up of brainwaves. Mm. You can actually see it. It's measurable, visible proof of the transfer of thoughts, feelings, memories. And so when we say about other people, oh, you know, we're totally in sync, or we're of like minds, it's not an analogy. It's not a metaphor. It is true. It's absolutely true. And that wonderful mirroring of brainwaves, which is wonderful to see if you've seen the studies where they show you how it just, they sync up, all of a sudden they link. And when that happens, you have the release of all these feel-good chemicals. And that's why it feels so good when you feel like this person gets me, this person understands me. It's oxytocin, it's serotonin, it's all these wonderful neurochemicals that go through your body. Mm. And it's evolutionarily beneficial. The reason why our bodies are doing that, because that's how you survive, is we were able to survive as a species by cooperating, by communicating. Like when we're foraging, going after, hunting big game, you had to communicate, cooperate, or you die. Mm. And so this is all beneficial, but it also, I also want to say that, you know, the science aside, one of the psychologists I interviewed, she called those moments snatches of magic. And they are. Anyone who's experienced that feeling, it is. It's a snatch of magic.
It's an instantaneous antidote to loneliness, too, I have to say. But as I hear you describe what happens in brains and bodies and souls even when that true deep listening is occurring, I'm also hearing something that takes a lot of focus in a world where we're filled with distraction. And so how do those competing distractions, and of course I'm specifically thinking of technology, how do they impinge or interfere with our ability to form the connections that we can when we're really deeply listening to another person?
It's disastrous, to put it very simply. And that's why I wrote the book. Because it's not just technology. I don't want to be, people think, ugh, anti-technology. This is not, I like my smartphone as much as anybody else. But it's not a substitute for those snatches of magic. You can't get it with a text. You can't get it with an email. It's, or even something like Zoom or something, especially not something like Zoom, because that distorts the facial features and really messes up your brain. We can talk about that more later if you want to. But the technology is wonderful for a bridge between those moments of when you're able to get together and do that kind of listening and just keep in touch. And that can make you feel good too. You get a text, I'm thinking about you. And, you know, I got one of those yesterday, and it does. It makes you feel good. And that's what technology is wonderful. Or also just, I'm running late. Or a little emoji. It's wonderful. But in terms of really creating those moments that you really feel restored and renewed and connected, you need to be with the person, and you need to be listening, and it needs to be an ongoing process. And if you don't make time for that, it really is disastrous. Recall that before the COVID pandemic, we were suffering from a loneliness epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we're not making time to listen to one another. Everybody wants to talk. Technology creates this, you know, everybody's starring in their own movie. You know, it's all content that's going out, but they're not taking anything in.
Yeah. You know, I want to acknowledge the profound irony of having this conversation about listening within the admittedly artificial construct of a live radio program, because I also have to, I'm actually distracted while we're talking because I have to keep one eye on the clock here. So forgive me for that, Kate. But it just shows how easily our minds can be distracted from these things. And I know that there's research out there that shows even just the presence of a phone in a room, it doesn't have to be on or in your hand, is enough to break the focus that a person needs for that deep listening. So we're going to get back to that in a moment here. But what I'd love to do is move towards the why listening matters part of your exploration and your book. So in order to do that, listen along with me, Kate, if you could, because this is Jamie Goulet and Kristen Saylor. They are students at Spring Arbor University in Spring Arbor, Michigan. And last summer, as protests broke out across the country, of course, after the death of George Floyd, Jamie and Kristen found themselves arguing on social media. And they told us their story, and Jamie starts.
I think we were just in a very tense time in our country. And I think I just had this built up frustration of things I'd been seeing online from people I knew or family members. And I saw this Facebook post from someone I kind of knew.
We lived on the same floor freshman year, but didn't really hang out or talk that much. Like, kind of like in the morning when you see each other brushing your teeth, you say hi.
And she made this post about the protests and the damaging, you know, of businesses and buildings and stuff. I think she was saying, like, I don't understand why people have to damage these buildings and stuff like that. And I replied, people are more important than buildings, you know. It's not about the buildings. It's just like trying to show that, you know, these people are being killed and no one cares, that you care more about these businesses and people are trying to be heard.
I remember like the one comment she made, I was just kind of like, okay, we're done, because she just said like, oh, like your ignorance is speaking louder than anything, or like something along those lines. That was just kind of like, wow, like she won't hear me out or anything. And like, she's not willing to have a civil discussion or a dialogue about this.
I left that interaction feeling, I think, very like let down in myself. So I think a few days went by and I was really like thinking about reaching out to Kristen. I ended up, you know, messaging her on Facebook and I apologized. I said, like, I'm so sorry. That was not appropriate. I shouldn't have done that. And I would really love to talk to you sometime.
I was just like really excited, like, oh my word, like this is such a cool opportunity. Like, we get to have like a conversation with someone who doesn't believe the same things I do.
She told me she was raised by two educators and she was raised to, you know, respect others, respect property, respect the rules and the law. And so what she was seeing online, the reasoning behind it was not dignified enough for the reaction. And I definitely understood that because, you know, from my own family's point of view, that's where they stand.
And then kind of just going through like how we can better have these conversations with people who have different beliefs, having some sort of relationship with the person and making sure it's like a safe conversation, like you're not going to go back to like personal text or anything like that.
When you're vulnerable with people, even though it's scary, it really helps open up other people to being vulnerable back with you. And you can really start to find what you have in common or your commonalities that can, you know, bring you together instead of push you apart.
With Jamie, it was just like both of us were like, oh, wow, like, okay, I see why you believe this now. Like, this makes so much more sense to me rather than making assumptions of what you think.
I think I just felt this sense of relief afterwards, of just letting this stress go and feeling that if like we could have this conversation, there's, you know, hope for others and hope for myself in the future that even if I make this mistake again, it's not over. There's still a chance to have that conversation.
Jamie Goulet and Kristen Saylor. Well, let's bring in John Wood Jr. now. He joins us from Los Angeles. He's national ambassador at Braver Angels, a national citizens movement aiming to bring liberals, conservatives, and others, wherever you are on the political spectrum, together at the grassroots level. John Wood Jr., welcome to On Point.
Hello. It's so nice to be on with you.
What'd you hear in that story that Jamie Goulet and Kristen Saylor shared with us?
Well, what I heard was an inspiring resolution to a circumstance that is all too common and all too often, you know, not so positively resolved in day-to-day American life. You had two individuals who crossed paths via social media, which, as Kate was explaining, is not the optimal place to find empathy and understanding in conversation. Coming to a point of disagreement on a deeply sensitive and fraught topic who ultimately, you know, found a way to use that as a window into one another's lived experiences. And through coming to understand the experiences that exist in the background of their point of view, they are able to find a basis for human connection, sort of aligning on the frequencies, to borrow Kate's terminology, in a way that allowed them to relish in shared humanity, even if they remained in disagreement on the subject. That is the way it should be in our political and conversational life.
But it's not. Not often enough, at least. So John Wood Jr. and Kate Murphy, hang on here for just a second. Got to take another quick break. And Kate, I want to hear a lot more from you about the politics of the moment when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today we are learning about the science of why we're not listening enough to each other and why it matters, from the personal to the political and back to the personal again. And I'm joined today by John Wood Jr. He's National Ambassador at Braver Angels, a national citizens movement aiming to bring together people across political divides at the grassroots level. He's with us from Los Angeles. And Kate Murphy joins us as well from Houston, Texas. She's author of You're Not Listening, What You're Missing, and Why It Matters. And actually, Kate, before we move forward, I would love to hear from you about what you discovered about how we react when we're confronted with information that challenges our beliefs. Because earlier we heard Jamie and Kristen talk about how they were able to overcome those reactions. But how do our brains react when we're confronted by things that challenge our views and beliefs?
Well, what happens is they've shown this by looking at people's brains and functional MRI machines, where it's actually real time what's happening in their brains. And they presented them with information or challenged their existing views, whether they were conservative or liberal. And when they challenged them, their brains reacted as if they were being chased by a bear. It was the fight or flight, full on fear. And you could hear that was what was happening between those two women when they were on Facebook, which gins people up. That those algorithms are created in such a way to gin up your amygdala. It's that fight or flight. I have this, what we used to be afraid of were lions, tigers, and bears. Now our biggest fears as human beings, the biggest threats to us personally, are ostracism, being canceled, being maligned and cast out. And so that's why we react that way. And it's a primitive thing. If we were cast out when we were cavemen or in primitive societies, you were in real trouble. You were going to die. And so that is a real primitive, when I was talking about that part of the brain and the amygdala, that it cancels out the higher order thinking. And what they were able to do by reaching out to one another and engaging that higher order thinking and being curious. The key is to be more curious. Your drive to be curious is more important than your drive to be right. And you're willing to ask. And when you start asking questions, then that's when you start listening. Listening is higher order thinking. You're curious. So why do you feel that way? How did you form that opinion? And that tamps down that fear response that's totally irrational, that makes people's eyes bulge and the veins pop out in their neck. Just, watch Sunday morning talk shows and you'll see exactly that.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Now, you know what's ironic, and perhaps, in fact, through its irony, it helps us see a path forward here, is that the very sort of fear cycle that so many of us feel like we're caught in is making it harder to become good listeners. But becoming a good listener somehow, and we'll talk about how, actually then has a measurable effect in reducing that fear. So we actually spoke with Avi Kluger, a professor of organizational behavior at the School of Business Administration at Hebrew University. He's also director of the Global Listening Center. And he actually did this meta-analysis of hundreds of papers from the early 1970s to 2017 and found that listening can help improve life in many ways, including relationships.
When you're really feel that I listen to you, your social anxiety goes down. You become less concerned about what words you should choose. When you become less concerned about it, you are more likely to share with me authentic ideas and thoughts. You'll be more honest with me.
It also improves job performance.
Good listeners are good performers in any job that I was looking at, and it predicts job performance better than any personality trait.
That's kind of amazing, to be perfectly honest. But Kluger also says, here's how he would summarize the power of listening.
This is how I predict that listening contributes to a variety of things. It improves the well-being, it improves the relationship, and it creates new knowledge that cannot be created alone. Cannot.
Now, by new knowledge, Kluger means that when we really are attuned to each other in conversation, this is what you said a little earlier, Kate, reactions and comments from the other person actually help us develop new thinking in our own minds. So, John Wood Jr., how would you apply this to, you know, the political moment that we find ourselves in, to the conversations that you have helped bring about between people from different points of view?
Well, you know, there's so much to be said about that, and perhaps it's useful to sort of look at this in both a macro and a micro sort of level. On the macro level, there is this way in which American society is just vastly more complicated today than even it used to be a generation and two generations ago. Part of that is technology. So much of that is diversity. And the fact that whereas in the past you sort of had a more centralized kind of mainstream narrative of American identity, even if it wasn't truly holistically inclusive of the input of all American experience and in the way that we in retrospect might have wanted for it to be, it nevertheless provided a framework within which we saw each other as being a part, at least in the mainstream of institutional society, as being a part of each other's story in some recognizable way. And so political differences could exist in a context where a difference in party affiliation did not signal a fundamental conflict of interests or even moral relationship. That is no longer quite so much the case today. And so you take that down to the micro level. Suddenly what we have is a relationship between each other to where the symbolism of our political affiliations and our ideological affinities, let's say you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat, or vice versa. If you're a Republican, suddenly you're showing up as a bear. If I'm a Democrat, I'm showing up as a lion or a tiger, right? In that context, it's very difficult to listen to the bear. Yeah. It's very difficult to listen to the lion, very difficult to listen to the tiger, right? And so, the way our culture has sort of evolved, it has become an anti-listening culture. Mm-hmm. We are speaking not to communicate, but to prevail over an enemy, to survive in a conflict for emotional and social survival. And, it distorts our ability to truly see each other and to truly be heard by each other.
Yeah. So, both of you are putting kind of our daily experiences as Americans, in my mind, in a completely new context that like we are seeing each other as bears and tigers, like literally a threat. And so, but it's also very hopeful to me, though, that something as simple but difficult as listening, though, could reduce our sense of that threat. That is a very powerful, powerful giver of hope, if I can put it that way. So, Kate, you've actually spoken to a lot of people who are very good at listening, and one of them is Naomi Henderson. And we actually spoke with her as well. She's CEO of Riva Market Research and Training Institute in Rockville, Maryland, and she conducts qualitative market research for big clients, Fortune 500 companies. She also teaches best practices for being a moderator. And as Naomi Henderson told us, she's been a professional listener for more than 50 years.
Listening professionally has clearly altered my ability to listen in life. And as a result, I have this sort of secondary career that I never counted on, which was I am a husband-like person to one of my friends because her husband doesn't listen. So I listen to her and just am present to what she's talking about. And I go, say more about that, or what exactly is the fear? So I am a professional listener to my friends because I'm listening without judging. And if you're judging them while you're listening, you really can't hear them. If their teeth or their nose ring or their tattoos or their color or their gender is in the way, you really can't hear them because you're putting them through your filters. And listening without judging is something you have to learn.
So how do you do that? Well, Naomi has some tips. Tip number one, listen with an open mind. Tip number two, good listening involves asking good questions.
One night, my husband and I had an agreement that he'd be home by like 6:30, eat a quick dinner, and we had to go to this really important meeting, which we were going to then have to make some decisions about the next arc of our lives. So this meeting was a big deal for us. So he doesn't come home at 6:30, doesn't come home at 7. He blows in at 7:30. Of course, I'm steamed because now we're going to be late. And I say, Luke, why are you late? And he goes, I do not want to talk about it. Goes in the room, slams the door. I thought, well, that's not working. So I wait a few minutes and I open the door quietly. And I say, babe, what happened? Oh, honey. And he launches into a long story about what happened, all of which was outside of his ability to control because they were externals like the traffic, the phone call, the fax didn't work, that sort of thing. So the better question, babe, what happened? Rather than why are you late, which somehow the man has got to be wrong and I get to be right. And how happy is that for a marriage? So I took it out. And listening to what happened, I have some compassion for the man who's just crazed at the events of that day.
That's Naomi Henderson, CEO of Riva Market Research and Training Institute. Now, Kate, we have about 5 minutes left in the show here, and we liked here at the program to think of providing folks with like an on-point toolkit of things that they can take away from the show and apply in their own lives. So I'd love to hear from both of you. And Kate, I'll start with you because you did talk to some of the best listeners in the world, including Naomi. What did you learn about how we can become better listeners?
I think the first thing is to remember that whenever you engage with someone, your behavior does two things. It either helps or hinders your understanding, and it strengthens or weakens the relationship. And listening is your best bet on both counts. And how do you, in my book, I have many chapters about how to be a better listener. But just to get people started, I would have everyone go into a conversation telling themselves, having this motivation, okay, when I'm finished with this conversation, I need to have answers to these two questions. And they are, what did I learn about that person? And then the second is, how did that person feel about what we were talking about? And if you're able to answer those two questions, you're well on your way to becoming a better listener.
Is there something that people ought to do even before the conversation starts? Especially since it sounds like we're talking about some of these conversations that are happening in fraught circumstances, to put it mildly. I mean, should we do something to moderate our own bodies, our own brains and emotions before we even enter the conversation that would make us better listeners?
I think, well, deep breaths are always good. They're always good because it calms down that fear response. It helps you get more centered. It's a very important thing, the breathing deeply, just breathe deeply, but also to develop your curiosity. Like I said, make it more important to be curious than to be right. Mm. And to go into every conversation with that mindset of how could I be wrong, instead of let me prove how I'm right.
Right.
And really try and understand the other person. You don't have to agree with them. You're not sanctioning their point of view by listening to it. You're just understanding it. And by understanding it, that is how we move forward. That's how you develop creative ideas. It's how you cooperate. It's how you find middle ground, or at least a peaceable existence.
Yeah.
So to just have this idea of maybe I'm not right, have some humility. That's how you prepare for any conversation.
You know, I'm thinking about the fact that it's so important and actually so exciting to have these simple means by which to get to know other people better. Now, no one says you have to like them more after you get to know them, but at least we can get to know each other better. So John Wood Jr., when you're doing this with folks and bringing people together who may not think they have anything in common at all, what do you tell them about what they should do in order to truly hear each other?
Well, you know, so we have a range of different frameworks in which we bring people together. I think that the fundamental sort of principle that we start with is that we enter into our engagements with each other, yes, certainly with curiosity and a willingness to listen, but even undergirding that, in a spirit of goodwill towards the other party. I've always strive to be a student of Dr. King's philosophy of nonviolence. And the philosophy of nonviolence is essentially the belief that love is a spiritual power. Agape love, which can be interpreted as goodwill, is a spiritual power that can be applied to social questions. And when you're genuinely curious about somebody else, when you are genuinely willing to hear them, you're signaling to that party that you perceive their humanity, and in so doing, that you ultimately wish them well. Because it's impossible for us to have a window into the humanity of another party without resonating with their experience within ourselves in some sense. Doesn't mean we agree with the perspective that is produced by that experience, but the human experience in the aggregate links us in a thread of shared feeling, and it allows us to align with the emotional realities of other people's existence such that we can speak our truths to them and be heard. And hear them speak theirs to us in return.
Well, we're hearing once again the power of the resonance that can happen between people when they listen. So John Wood Jr., National Ambassador at Braver Angels, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. This has been wonderful.
And Kate Murphy, author of You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. It's been a real pleasure, Kate, to be able to listen with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely to talk to you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.